Chapter 4 Victor stubbed out the cigarette he'd smoked halfway down and let the smoke roll from his mouth. His vice president, Philip Bancroft, sat across from him, puffing on a stogie. Bancroft had been with Victor from the company's inception. He came from old family money and had been a major donor, allowing Victor to buy machinery and buildings for the business. Although 10 years older than Victor, Bancroft never wanted to be in charge. As the VP, he had a say in major decisions, but he rarely wanted to be involved. His other business ventures had mostly failed, so he happily stayed on as VP at Brooks Industries and let Victor make most of the hard decisions. But Victor wanted him in on this one.
"This war's going to put us back solidly in the black," Victor started out.
He smoothed his mustache, twirling the ends out of habit.
8% profits is what they propose.
Bancroft looked up from the report he'd been leafing through. His large red nose had deep pits, reminding Victor of his long-standing drinking habit.
"Is that so?" Bancroft huffed. "Well, at least something good might come of this war."
"I wanted to talk with you about Trask Industries,"
Bancroft harumphed and said. "What are those malcontents up to this time? Has the union been sniffing around again?"
"Don't you keep up on the news? The unions signed on to the no-strike agreement. Labor and management are going to play nice during this conflict, for once. For the moment, strikes are a thing of the past. But Trask is our main regional competition for the government contract. I'm worried that they may have an advantage over us. They're bigger, and they've kept most of their workforce over the years, while we've cut ours in half."
Bancroft scowled. "Yes, and Trask played a big hand in that."
"Right. I'll never forgive Thomas for taking our best workers during our most trying time."
Bancroft's brow furrowed, bringing his eyebrows into one bushy mess.
"I think his son Harry had more to do with that than Thomas. Harry was the man the paper quoted, as I recall. All that rubbish about wages versus profits. How he calls himself a businessman is beyond me. Shows you how fickle the workforce is. Long-time employees leaving us for a few more shekels."
Victor said, "You're probably right about Thomas. He is getting on in years, but he's still the head man, if only in title. He could have put a stop to it, but he let it happen even though he knew it would devastate us."
He waved his hand dismissively.
"But it's neither here nor there. We have the opportunity to get back on our feet again."
He leveled his gaze at Bancroft and lowered his voice.
"And put Trask out of business for good."
Bancroft returned Victor's steady gaze.
"And how exactly would you go about doing that?"
"The government folks will come around here next week to evaluate our capacity to change over from making blenders to making bullets. Our machinists are confident it can be done quickly and efficiently. We've already started to change the floor plan, moving out old equipment and bringing in the new. I know we'll get a piece of that contract. Trask is just as qualified. In fact, they have more space, so they might be able to outproduce us, which doesn't really matter. We're paid either way."
He leaned onto the table.
"A lot of things can go wrong while a factory is being retooled and reconfigured. Accidents can happen."
Bancroft shook his head.
"Just get to the point, Victor."
"I want Trask Industries to have an accident. I want them out of the running altogether."
Bancroft's eyes narrowed and Victor added,
"I want Trask Industries to have an unfortunate fire."
"If you can't beat them, burn them down. Is that what you're saying?"
Victor leaned back in his leather chair. He knew how it sounded, but he also knew how much Bancroft hated Trask, almost as much as he did. They'd nearly destroyed his business, his livelihood. He couldn't forgive that. Bancroft molded over for an uncomfortably long time. Victor gave him the time, knowing he'd come around. Finally, Bancroft asked,
"How? How would you do it?"
"I've talked to Sal about it already. He's reconnoitered the plant. It'll be a simple job."
"Sal. Yes. He's reliable and careful."
Victor planted his elbows on the table. Which is why I'm putting him in charge of the team. Bancroft looked surprised.
The team?
I'm giving the job to Miles Burr.
The young whippersnapper in hiring? He's like a babe in the woods. Why?
2 reasons. It'll prove his loyalty, and it'll give us leverage over him in case he grows too big for his own britches. He's a rising star, that one.
Bancroft rubbed his fatty chin and said, You are a crafty one, Victor. What if the lad botches the whole thing?
Sal won't let that happen. I have full confidence in him. So what do you think?
I think you brought me in here just to make me an accomplice.
Nonsense! You're the VP! I wouldn't do something like this without your approval. You know that. Besides, if it ever got out, you'd be an accomplice whether or not you knew about it.
Bancroft harumphed and said, I would enjoy seeing Trask finally get what he's got coming to him. I'm with you, Victor.
Clyde stepped through the door to his apartment, hung his jacket and hat, and didn't smell burnt food. The wonderful aroma of a spiced red sauce and garlic filled the space. The small dining room table had a slender white candle burning. The flame flickered when he shut the door.
I'm home, Abby.
She emerged from the bedroom wearing a tight-fitting red dress. She'd put up her hair and used the ruby-red lipstick that always drove him crazy. She smiled at his reaction. I didn't hear you come in, darling.
Wow. Just wow. You look amazing. The food smells amazing.
I think I must be the luckiest man in the world.
She giggled and went to the refrigerator.
Get comfortable. We can eat now or whenever you're ready.
He checked his watch. I'm sorry I'm late again. Work's crazy as usual. Let's eat now. I'm starving and the smell is killing me.
He sat down and she brought out a tossed salad. She scooped a portion onto his plate, then went back to the kitchen and brought out the main course, spaghetti and garlic bread. She smiled as he clapped his hands together in anticipation. She said, I didn't burn any of it this time.
You're getting the hang of it.
Honestly, I'm really starting to enjoy it.
She remembered something and held her finger up.
I almost forgot. You got another letter from your cousin, I think. The paratrooper.
Sean, he stated.
She handed it to him and he placed it on the side of the table. Aren't you going to open it?
I'm too hungry and I don't want this wonderful meal to get cold. They both dug in, slurping noodles, dipping bread, and savoring the greens.
She'd even found some red wine.
When Clyde finally had his fill, he leaned back and thumped his expanded belly.
Wow! You keep cooking like that and you'll have a big fat slob on your hands.
She dabbed the sides of her mouth.
It was good, wasn't it? You sound surprised. Well, I haven't had much success before now.
You're an amazingly talented woman, Abby. I lucked out.
The pride in his eyes shone through to hers. She said, We both lucked out.
She pointed to the letter.
Didn't you just get a letter from him not too long ago?
He picked it up and tapped the edge on the tabletop.
Yes. He looked across the table and their eyes locked. I wrote him back, asking for more information about the paratroopers.
Her face blanched.
What do you mean? You're not thinking of that, are you?
Well, I think I have to face the facts. We have to face the facts.
I'm going to get my letter from Uncle Sam any day now. I can feel it.
It's happening more and more at the paper.
He indicated the letter.
Sean complained that he thought the paratroopers won't even be used in the war, remember? He thinks they'll be a sideshow.
But you're against the war. Now you want to join up?
I was against us going to war to defend Europe, but the Japs didn't give us much of a choice.
I don't want to join. In fact, it's the last thing I want to do. But like I said, we got to face the facts.
When I get the draft notice, they'll put me where they need me, probably right on the front lines. If I enlist, I can choose where I want to go.
I'll choose paratroopers and never fire a shot. I might not even leave the States.
You can just choose paratroopers? Is that how it works?
He held up the letter. That's what I'm hoping Sean's letter will explain.
But you're a reporter. Why not join as a newsman? They must need reporters.
He pursed his lips. I asked around about that. The service has their own reporters and photographers. I could try for that, but it sounds like a crapshoot. Those spots are hard to come by.
What about our plans of starting a family?
He moved the candle and reached across the table, and they held hands. This won't happen overnight. We'll keep trying right up until the day I leave, he said with a glint in his eye. She rubbed his hands and smiled sadly.
What if you go to war? What if...
I'll be fine. Parachuting doesn't sound feasible in a war.
But even if you don't end up fighting, you'll still be parachuting from an airplane. That sounds terribly dangerous. You could die, Clyde.
I could die crossing the street tomorrow. He knew she hated when he said that, and she released his hands.
You're far more likely to die jumping out of an airplane than crossing the street, and you know it.
Clyde held up the letter. I'll read what he has to say and go from there. Who knows? Maybe I'm too old already.
At 22? I seriously doubt that.
She stood and pushed her chair back loudly. I'll clear the dishes and you go read your letter on the couch. When she'd finished, she flopped down on the couch beside him. He'd moved from the letter onto the newspaper. Every story had to do with the war, and every story painted a bleak picture.
What did John say?
Who?
He teased. She smacked his arm.
We won't be trying for a baby anytime soon with that attitude, mister.
Okay, okay, he said, holding up his hands in mock surrender.
It actually isn't going to work out. Sean says when he volunteered, one of the questions he had to answer was whether he was married. When he didn't give her any more, she asked,
And?
It's an automatic refusal. They're not letting married men in. They say it's too dangerous for a family man.
She snuggled up into his side and he wrapped his arm around her. She said, I'm relieved, honestly. It sounds dangerous, and there's no guarantee you wouldn't be sent to the fighting.
He kissed the top of her head.
I think you kind of liked the idea of me being a big bad paratrooper, though, didn't you?
She squeezed him tighter.
You would look good in a uniform.
Well, you'll still see me in one eventually, but we won't know what branch.
So you'll let the draft board decide?
I don't know. I'll see if anyone at work has any connections with the Army Press Corps. She suddenly sat up and placed her hand on his chest.
Oh my goodness! Daddy has connections with the military. He's had contracts with them. I'll bet he could help.
Clyde groaned and she smacked his chest. She raised her voice slightly.
You have to swallow your pride on this one, Clyde.
Do it for me, she pleaded. I don't like asking him for anything. I'll always owe him something. He'll always have power over me. Over us.
This is too important. It could be life or death.
She darted off the couch and faced him.
I'll set up a dinner.
She looked at the small apartment. We'll have to do it there, though. She stared at him with an intensity he'd never seen before. He finally sighed and said,
Okay, Abby, I'll do it for you.
The four of them sat around the large cherry wood table, three quarters of it left unused. Conversation had been stilted and difficult all night. It mostly centered around Victor's factory and the difficulties he had to overcome to produce war goods. Meredith didn't say much, but was obviously happy to see her daughter. Once the staff cleared the dinner plates and before dessert, Victor concentrated on his son-in-law.
So, how's the paper?
I heard you've moved up to reporter now.
Yes, sir. That's correct. I like the work so far.
Still no plans to join the service?
Clyde stole a quick glance at Abby, whose eyes pleaded for him to ask what she wanted him to ask.
He wondered if she'd already spoken to him, but figured it didn't really matter.
Actually, I've changed my mind about that. I was thinking of joining the paratroopers, but...
Victor interrupted him. The paratroopers? That's an elite group. You really think you could cut it?
Clyde felt anger welling in his stomach. Abby gave him a warning look, but he wasn't watching her.
Yes, of course I could cut it. But unfortunately, they don't take married men. I was thinking of joining the press corps instead.
What a silly rule. A married man's as good as the next man. Who told you that?
My cousin Sean's in training to be one at Fort Benning, Georgia. He told me it was an automatic disqualification. Victor leaned back in his chair as though aghast at the notion.
That doesn't seem right. Even a man like you should get a chance.
Clyde's ire rose higher, but before he could explode in anger, Abby kicked him in the shin beneath the table. She said,
Daddy, don't you have connections with the military? You could get him into the press.
Victor cut her off.
By George, you're right, Abigail. I bet I could get them to overlook his marital status.
She raised her voice.
I mean for the press corps, not the paratroopers. That's far too dangerous.
Nonsense. It's a wonderful idea. I'll help Clyde get into the paratroopers. I know just who to ask, and he can't say no. He owes me a favor.
He looked at Clyde with something other than utter disgust for the first time.
Unless you don't think you can hack it.
Meredith eyed her husband suspiciously. Before Clyde could answer, she said,
You're already a reporter. That seems like the more natural pathway for you.
Victor's bushy eyebrows came together and formed a single V pointing down his long nose.
Bah! The boy wants an adventure, not some stodgy desk job.
He beamed at Clyde.
I may have underestimated you, my boy.
Clyde couldn't help but feel elation, despite loathing his stick-in-the-mud father-in-law. Clyde said, Sean doubts they'll see much combat, but jumping from airplanes does sound like an adventure. Victor smiled and glanced at the hulking form of his driver and security guard, Sal, standing in the corner with his white-gloved hands crossed in front of his waist. Two servers entered the room carrying dessert plates. They placed them in front of each of them, Meredith first, then departed quickly. Victor picked up a dessert spoon and dug into the chocolate mousse. He savored the first bite and said,
Delicious.
The others tasted the delicacy and moaned in pleasure. Victor pointed his spoon at Clyde.
I'll bet you're right about the paratroopers. The Germans tried it on Crete last year. They lost half the unit. Men hanging from parachutes are far too easy to see and shoot.
Clyde looked surprised.
I didn't know that. Don't the Germans occupy that island?
Victor nodded.
I think the Italians do now, but same thing, really. The Germans took it for them.
So the German paratroopers were successful then? Victor conceded the point.
Well, yes, but at such a cost. The United States has to field a unit or two just to keep the Huns guessing.
So they won't use them in combat? Abby asked for clarification.
Well, I'm not a general officer in the army, but I doubt it very much.
Abby's gaze broke away from her father's, and she stared at Clyde for a long moment. Victor broke the silence.
If you can hack it, I think it would be an excellent choice for you.
Clyde's face darkened, and he glared at Victor.
I can hack it. I'd welcome the challenge.
Meredith downed the rest of her red wine and put the stemmed glassware down with a loud clatter. All eyes shifted to her. Victor gave his wife a stern look, and she didn't say what she wanted to say. Meredith smiled at Clyde and purred,
You would look striking in a paratrooper uniform.
Abby's face reddened, and she said,
Mother, stop.
Abby smiled and looked to her father.
You'll put a word in then, Daddy?
His eyes softened.
Of course, my dear. I'll see him tomorrow. Of course, you'll have to enlist in the army and go through basic training first. You can't just start with the paratroopers.
Clyde nodded. Of course. I know how it works.
Excellent. It's settled, then.
After Sal dropped Abby and Clyde back at their apartment and returned to the Brooks estate, he went to the study, where he knew he'd find his boss. He knocked softly and heard Victor's muffled voice. Sal entered and closed the doors behind him. Victor sat in a grand leather wing chair facing the glowing embers of a fire. He smoked a cigar. A glass of dark liquor sat on the end table beside him.
Well, that worked out far better than I thought it would. What was the ride home like?
They talked about the paratroopers the entire way home. Abigail is worried he'll get hurt in training, but neither of them talked about the prospect of combat.
Despite my feelings toward the little shit, he's not stupid. Once he's in the unit, he'll figure out they're not training for some peacetime exhibition force. Even if they don't actually jump into combat, they'll be used on the front line. They're an elite unit, some of the best men the army has to offer.
It's a wonder his cousin could be so naive, Sal stated.
He's a few years younger. He's probably raring to go and can't get there fast enough. Clyde has more sense than that.
So, you'll put the word into General Davies? Could end up killing him.
Victor stared into the embers for a full minute before he finally answered.
I've wanted this wedding annulled from the start. Abigail is too good for this boy. Hell, he knows it himself. You can see it in his watery eyes. His father works on the docks, for God's sake.
Victor offered Sal a cigar and lit it off his own. He indicated the matching chair across from the end table. Sal lowered his massive frame, and the leather and wood squeaked and strained as it adjusted to his weight.
It's honest work. No shame in that, Sal said.
Victor waved the cigar dismissively.
You know what I mean. Abigail deserves a better life than that.
If something happens to him, it'll break her heart, Sal said.
Victor puffed and blew out a cloud of grayish-white smoke.
I know. I can see how much she loves him, but she's too young. It's puppy love. She can't possibly know what she wants yet, and soon she'll tire of being poor.
He pointed the tip of the cigar at Sal.
You and I both know how that feels.
Sal nodded and watched the coals of the fire shift and spark. They'd both grown up poor. When the first war broke out in Europe, Sal had enlisted and Victor had gone to work. They'd both thrived in vastly different ways.
Victor continued, When he ships out, she'll spend more time here and get used to her old life again. She'll be around rich young men, men like Miles Burr.
Sal's voice lowered dangerously.
I don't like that little prick. Besides, Abby won't cheat. Her soul is pure.
Victor grinned and looked at his old friend.
I agree. Miles is an ass, but he's also rich and successful. He'll mature. She'll see that.
Sal's eyes flashed with anger for a moment. Victor laughed.
You might actually know her better than I do. I know she's like a daughter to you.
Victor waved his cigar and ash descended onto the rug.
Being apart from the boy for a long period might be just the thing to make her reconsider her choice, though.
Or perhaps he'll die somewhere in Europe, Sal stated darkly. The fucking Bosch will do your dirty work for you.
Victor gave Sal a withering look.
He could die in the press corps just as easily,
countered Victor, but they both knew it wasn't true.
Victor stared into the coals, sipped his whiskey, and puffed his cigar.
He finally said,
I'll talk to General Davies. He has enough influence to get Clyde into the paratroopers.
He leveled his gaze at his old friend and confidant.
Do you think the young man will make the cut?
Sal considered the question between puffs of the cigar. He finally said,
I think he's smart enough, and he grew up rough and tumble. But he's soft at heart, too emotional. From what I hear, the paratroopers are tough. I doubt he'll make the cut, although you prodding him like you did might stiffen his resolve.
Victor shrugged and said, He's easy to manipulate. I'm going to tell Davies to make sure he doesn't make it through. As a washout, he'll be disgraced, and Abigail will see him for what he is. Weak.